So what I told you was true, from
Sci-Fi Malady
point of view.
This weekend, on an all-new Sci-Fi Malady original series, welcome to East Texas, where a special boy meets the love of his life, and they embark on the journey of a lifetime. From the creator of young adult novels and starring Ender, Blondie 90210, Gary's Spaceman, and introducing that woman you sort of recognize from, what was it, House on Haunted Hill on Netflix? As the astronaut lady. See the journey, the trials, and the joy of a reunited family in The Space Between Us.
Sci-Fi Malady, symptom 185, The Space Between Us, Irresponsible NASA.
Welcome back, sickies, to Romance Sci-Fi on Sanguine Sci-Fi Month. This Sanguine Sci-Fi Month. So we are covering the final... Yeah, I blew that one.
Welcome back, people, to this happy Monday on this Monday to all of you on this Monday. Happy Monday.
Yeah, exactly. That's about as well as it was.
On a Saturday.
Anyway, so if this is our final episode of the month, we are covering the movie The Space Between Us, which really, I knew we were going to get to this because it is, at the end of the day, a romantic kind of film. But at the same time, let's just put this out there. It's a teen drama. It is a young adult teen drama, which was designed... Well, it had to have been designed for a woman. There's no other way around it, because with the exception of maybe some of the scientific parts, it really comes off as, especially when the main character Gardner, winds up on Earth. That part, up until that moment, there's a little bit of intriguing things for a guy. But then it really takes the turn of, well, relationship drama, and the camera work goes that direction. As soon as Gardner escapes and finds the girl he likes, that's how basic this story is. As soon as he meets Tulsa, it turns into a teen drama, and then it just really slows down if you are a 40-year-old guy or a 20-year-old guy or a guy in general.
I do take issue with something else you said, though. You called this a young adult drama.
Yeah.
I'll have my young adult drama. Hold the drama, please.
Well, I mean, there's no drama.
Well, okay, I would say there is, because there's... Well, you got to remember, too, young adult drama isn't the same as drama. Young adult drama addresses really teeny bopper things. So what you or I would think of as legitimate drama, like the movie Her last week, a teenager would go in a completely different direction with a lot of feelings and I don't know, and that just is not...
Well, it does. You're right, they did have plenty of the emo stuff going.
Right, exactly. What we would find as good drama at this movie, we look at it and we're just like, so there's that. But that, honestly, that's what it is. It's a young adult romance drama, kinda. Which, it was basically the director or the creator just said, what if an astronaut got pregnant in space? Which, NASA's already been asking that question, but hey, they just decided to make a story out of it.
Yeah, I don't know. Was that the question, that the high concept of this, or was it, what if there was a child born on Mars?
You know, I was reading an article and it said we started with the child in space, you know, pregnant in space, and then it went from there, I guess.
That makes sense, being that pretty much is where the focus was.
Well, and that's how it starts, really. So, just before we jump on in, we got to get out of the way our fun facts and, well, plot, which I will be able to get through in a minute, I think. So a few fun facts about this movie. First of all, and we're going to go into this in more detail, so I'm just going to skip through this part. The science was actually pretty good for the most part. Considering what this was, it wasn't all that bad. Just as a quick example, the time distance between Earth and Mars was pretty darn close. It wasn't like J.J. Abrams, we got there in 2 hours. So that was okay. That's just one example. And in fact, the director consulted with Professor G. Scott Hubbard, who is NASA's first Mars czar, and that reflects in where some of the accuracy comes from. So they did seem to care about that. Another one is that pregnancy in space is a concern of NASA. Not that they're hoping it happens, but it is a question they're raising because it could happen.
Well, that's why we basically have sent a million rats up there to.
Right. And that's been the case. We have had pregnant rats in space, and that is something.
Rats. We're murdering them just for no reason.
Yes, for no reason.
Absolutely none.
This movie deals not just with the romance relationship, but also the physical toll on the human body. That is shown. We do see that with the enlarged heart and the fact that they had to put inanimate carbon rods into his bones, which, yeah, that would make sense. When he first gets to Earth, he has to put on the glass sunglasses because he's not used to the bright sunlight, and he's amazed by the colors, and that's all about right. Gardner Elliott, the last name Elliott comes from the character of Elliott from E.T. That was a little fun point. Point that Scott made earlier off before recording that Tulsa, I love when they get a 20-some to play a teenager. Scott, she just looks old. She was actually 16 when they made this movie.
No, she's 27.
No, she's 16.
The actress,
no way.
Robertson was 25 when they shot the film, and Asa was 16.
Asa is the dude.
Asa's the dude?
Yes.
Yes.
Asa's the dude.
Oh, I got a difference. Okay, well, excuse me then. Never mind. I take it
back. She's like 30 right now.
Oh, I confused the two. Never mind. But she is just older than a boy who's so isolated and cocooned, born in a bubble. That dynamic worked really well. Yeah, I guess. In order to achieve zero gravity, they used wires and harness work. Oh, and the filmmakers spent time with Elon Musk to get ideas as well. So we could at least appreciate the fact that they were trying to do the science well. They weren't. And I think that's kind of a trend we see now in certain films ever since Interstellar by Chris Nolan, that we're trying to create like ships that generate gravity. They have the spinning centrifuge for gravity, things like that. Even the ship in Avatar was pretty accurate. So to what we could do. So I think that's a good thing that we're trying to angle more in that direction. We don't always achieve it, of course, but at least there's an attempt. Whereas before it was just, make something up that looks cool and glue some sweet tarts onto a plastic sheet for the computer.
Sorry. I mean, that was the extent of the budget they had, man.
Yeah, true. So we'll do the plot and then we could dive into the science, because I know Thomas did a little bit of looking up for this and he found some fun facts we ought to hear about that in detail. So the plot is basically that Gardner Elliott, his mother was an astronaut on an exploration. They were going to a colony on Mars called East Texas. And she got pregnant before departing for Mars. And when she arrived on Mars, she gave birth to the boy. She died in the process, and Gardner grew up on Mars. Eventually, he befriends a girl named Tulsa online. And he decides that he wants to go back home so that he can not only meet this girl, Tulsa, but find who he believes is his father based on a photograph he managed to get. He convinces NASA to bring him back after he goes through some procedures like inanimate carbon rods inside of his bones and some other treatments so that he can get to Earth and try to survive for longer than 5 minutes. And once he arrives, he
escapes using the magnetic plate in his chest because somehow that works on NASA too. Don't ask. And he escapes, meets up with Tulsa, and then everything just... The escape scene, by the way, is really hyper, just go with it, because they need him to get away from NASA.
It's really dumb.
Yeah, it is. And so he meets with Tulsa, and they go on this wonderful journey where they go meet some shaman in Arizona and some other things. They go to Las Vegas so he could see the world. But by this point, he's starting to suffer the effects of gravity. And he does manage to get to the house where his mother lived, only to find out that the guy he thought was his dad was actually his uncle. And then they quickly push that guy out of the way. And just as soon as he goes out to the ocean, to Gardner, that is, to let himself die, his dad, Gary Oldman, just shows up and saves him and convinces him to go back to Earth. And guess what? Tulsa, who's a foster kid, gets picked up by the astronaut lady that came back with Gardner, and she adopts her. And not only that, trains her to be an astronaut, or at least that's what it looks like, because the movie ends with Gardner and Daddy Gary Oldman on Mars together. And then the woman that raised him, raising Tulsa to be an astronaut, I guess. Oh yeah, and save Gardner before they took him back to Mars. They had to fly him in the stratosphere so gravity wouldn't affect him. It was a convenient yada, yada, yada. So
yeah, it was a big Chekhov's gun, because for no reason whatsoever does he sneak back to his private flight simulator to run the flight that he will make at the end later.
Yeah, so
he's just been doing that constantly ever since the first time we saw him.
Because he has some kind of brain tumor that it's not a tumor. No,
it's almost as if he was considering trying to just fly to Mars himself in that shuttle that couldn't make it to Mars.
On
it.
I mean, but, yeah,
it's the most pointless Chekhov's gun ever.
But yeah, they used it, I guess. At least they used, I don't know. But then that's the story. And as I said, there's parts of it, especially at the beginning, where you're kind of perked up for a minute, like, oh, what's happening here? And then it slogs into a bad part, and then it slogs into boring. And
immediate observation. It's nice to know that the criminal justice system has been liberalized so that the multiple cases of grand theft auto that the two of them committed while running across the country, as well as the petty theft and credit card theft, will go unprosecuted because they're just kids being kids.
Scott is jumping ahead to rips and picks, but I wanted to. He is. This was something he had to get out. But one thing I wanted to, like I said, now that we got all the plot stuff out of the way, I think we need to get into the science of this, which you can call it a rip or a pick, but the concept in particular, we're talking about sex in space. Well, okay, they didn't really do the sex in space part, but pregnancy in space, child rearing on a planet that's not Earth, and the effects of that, especially if you bring them back to zero G. That is, I think, where the biggest amount of science we're going to talk about is, I think. So, Thomas, you did a little bit of looking into this. What'd you dig up?
Well, being that NASA is NASA, they have extensively studied pregnancy and the effects of low gravity on the human body through both humans being in space. We've gotten plenty of years of that now. But also rats, salamanders, you know, anything they can think of, they've been shooting into space and looking at embryos and how they develop and all this. And let's just say that the challenges of getting pregnant in space, I mean, they did luckily in this movie not address that and say she got pregnant before launching into space, which does put quite a bit of stress on the body getting launched into space. But sure, we'll just go with it.
Well, I mean, that could have caused a tubular miscarriage. Pregnancy.
Yes, I'm sure nothing happened to the fetus pulling multiple G's of gravity as it left the Earth's atmosphere.
Well, yeah, but just being in space could have caused a tubular pregnancy. So,
there's a high chance that of a miscarriage or complications, because this is the thing about the human body. We are 100% developed for 1G.
Right.
Anything other than one atmosphere of pressure messes with us. And then if we go, that's why we have problems diving and thinking of putting people underwater.
Yeah. I mean, all those G's of pressure internally on the developing child couldn't have
done any
harm.
Not to mention, right, we don't know. I don't know how the level of radiation could have done, but I don't know if it's that high, but.
Actually, I was about to get to that.
Wait. Mike Barra told me that the Van Allen belt radiation would kill anyone in seconds.
Well, Mike Barra is a jerk.
Yeah, let's knock into our conspiracy month again.
You've
but,
got to ask, was Gardner Elliott an alien?
You're absolutely right, Mark, because I was just speaking on right then the gravity, which would have detrimental effects to any fetal growth and any development. But then, yes, there is a large amount of radiation, and you better hope there wasn't a solar flare in that 7-month travel to Mars that caused an increase in radiation. But yeah, that's not good for fetal development, any kind of extra radiation. So that's a whole nother thing. But then taking a child who pretty much, let's be honest, somehow survived the massive G's of atmosphere, exit, but then basically took the entire development period in space.
Right. Yeah, it was
zero gravity. And then landing it on Mars, that thing should have died in childbirth if it somehow miraculously made it to Mars.
If it saved liftoff and landing.
Right, and it's like somehow this thing survived. This is more than a miracle that the movie makes it out to be. The movie makes it out to be, oh, it's a miracle. Yes, it's an absolute miracle, because that baby should be dead 20 times over, because it's probably gone through enough things that should have killed it by then. I mean, just the gestation period in space should have caused such massive complications on that child.
Right. Well, I mean, even Gary Oldman in that movie says, this is uncharted territory. Well, that's for sure, because it's not entirely uncharted in that we've done it to other animals, but to humans, never happened. And odds are not in that child's favor.
No, and most of the things we've done to have been like, we haven't really done it with large mammals. The largest, we've really done it with is rats and mice.
Right.
And when we've done it to them, they've had problems. It's like trying to size it up to a human, which, let's be honest, we're much, much bigger than a mouse.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, please, the complication level skyrockets so high. And gestation period. That's another biggie. Mice have a very short gestation period.
That's true. Compared to 9 months in the womb is a lot of time for stuff to go wrong.
Correct. And that's why the mouse experiments have been so problematic, is the shorter gestation periods. NASA's always looked at it and gone, okay, the complications on this is still something, but it's not as bad because it's a short gestation period. 9 months means, let's be honest, you have, how does the heart develop and the brain develops, because slowly in zero gravity. What happens? It's like, this child somehow just having brittle bones and an enlarged heart?
Well, and those are real things that could happen to it. Those are
absolutely
legit, but then
my point
that's
is,
it.
And that's it's, it. That's,
he's,
yeah.
He's taller. I mean, yeah, that would happen too, but.
Yeah, okay, yes, but my point, well, this I'm about to get to that, but.
Gangly.
Him somehow just having two issues out of that. I mean, he should probably also have asthma, a swell, larger than usual brain issues. He could have had
a fat face or something.
Well, there's also probably internal organ displacement, but a million things. And then when he gets to Mars, we're having studies trying to figure out, what zero gravity does. We also do studies on what low gravity does. And low gravity, or lower gravity, I should say, Mars has close to Earth gravity, but not exact. It has lower gravity, which would add a whole nother host of issues, of developmental issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the amount of developmental issues this kid should have is absurdly high.
You really do just have to take it and say, well, they picked two that are feasible that he probably would have and just stuck with that. And for the purpose of the story, we just have to roll with it.
Yeah, if you gave him all of the variations that he should have, you don't have a movie.
Oh,
well, no, actually,
or you have a very different movie. And probably the movie we should have got out of this concept.
He should be blind. I just thought of this. He should actually be blind. Because the corner, how the eyeball develops and shouldn't develop properly.
Well, I mean, maybe, or at the very least have color blindness or something like that. Something wrong with his eyes.
Okay, let's rephrase that. He might not be blind, but he should have some definite damage to the eye.
Yeah, I'd have just from development. Vision. Yeah.
Yeah.
There probably should have been massive issues with the fact that in low G development and zero G growth, that when there should have been compression issues, massive compression issues. Mm. I mean, but if they look at all the flaws that should have been in his development, you get a different movie. And honestly, probably the movie that we should have gotten. Mark, you mentioned it. You're dealing with child rearing in space, child birth in space, and raising a child in space.
Yeah.
And the movie spends zero time on any of it.
I was raised by scientists. That's all we get.
Yes. A far more fascinating story, and one that would have made more sense and required less suspension of disbelief, was showing him actually going into raising a child by a team of scientists without either parent on a space station in a bubble. The mischief the child can get up to, or the resentment the child has seeing his caretakers as jailers. And then maybe instead of spending an act showing them falling in love over the distances, spend the entire movie showing them fall in love, and then have an emotional moment like you have at the end where he has to tell her, it's completely impossible for me to come see you, and it's impossible for you to come see me. There's a lot more emotional punch in that film.
Yeah. Well, because she takes a moment to explain her feelings of their connection when she says, you're the only reason I took calculus, because the teacher's too drunk to pay attention so I could talk to you. And to explaining how people suck. So you get this notion, okay, she's a foster kid and her foster dad's a lush and she has to take care of him to do the one job he has. And you get the idea that she's had other foster parents, but it's just all so quick. It's all just so, oh yeah. And then this, you just have to plow through it so you could get to the part where they're together and looking for his dad.
Right. That's the other thing. A far better way to tell this story would have been to take a look at the emotional impact of being part of the foster system.
But that again would have been a different movie.
Yeah, it would have been a much better movie. You started with high concept of a child born in space, and you ended up getting to this nonsense. And I'll just say nonsense. You get to a very sterile love movie that you've seen 100 times. When you had a chance to do something very unique on both fronts, you could have shown a troubled foster child who's been let down by the system falling in love in an impossible relationship with a troubled foster child on Mars who was screwed over by NASA and his biological father, and both of them finding the only person in the world they could communicate with and the only people who could understand them, and having it be unattainable. There's a powerful story in there emotionally that will tug on your heartstrings. But
they blow it.
And you got this, which it's an okay story, and they're aw moments, you know, but there's nothing remarkable about this film.
But then there's also just such cheese, like, and we're kind of getting into rips and picks now, but the like when they go see that shaman who married his parents, and the guy just kind of like, yeah, I married him. Here you go. Here's the address. And on the way out, there's those ladies throwing confetti in the air, and they're just so happy. Because they think kiss. They got married. Yeah, and it's and they're kissing and they're smiling. It's like, that's romantic, but wow, is it cheesy and out of place.
Yeah, I think the only place that this is going to fit before we get into rips and picks, other than, you know, it's kind of a... One of the problems I had with this film, too, and I kind of discussed it pre-show, it becomes a boring film because if there's... We said kind of in the intro, too, anywhere where there was possibly drama, the film runs away from it.
Oh, well, that... And, you know, that's a big rip. The fact that there's... you and the way you put it was... There's no conflict. And like any decent writer will tell you, you need to have some form of conflict. And I suppose there was, in the sense that there was a time clock they were running out, but because the ending was just the Enders. Yeah, Ender's Game. The ending.
His heart exploding.
Yeah, he made it through that. So there was, I guess, a conflict in the you had to run out the clock, beat the clock, but it wasn't that.
There's no
intensity wasn't there. The intensity wasn't there. Nope. It wasn't like you had never at no point did you think he's going to die.
There were multiple cases where you could have had drama. OK, mom finds out she's pregnant. Big debate over keeping the baby, aborting the baby. NASA trying to force an abortion so that this cover up, so that they can, the private company trying to force an abortion. Gary Oldman. And look, despite whatever your personal opinion on abortion was, that was the place to put in some conflict and have characters argue and yell and have a discussion. It's science fiction. That was a place to have a humanist discussion. And you didn't.
Even most people who are against abortions still have, you know, caveats on situations where they think there are chances and opportunities where it might be acceptable.
Well, yeah, I was about to say there's not I don't know. I have only met one person that is 100% anti-abortion all the time. In the case of had it been a tubular pregnancy where the baby's going to die, now it's a save the mom. I don't think anybody at that point, even the Supreme Court before Roe v. Wade would have said, of course that's legal. Yeah. Of course that's legal.
And in this case, neither the mom or the baby should have really survived this. Neither one should have. This, that would have been the case to have that discussion. Then Gary Oldman, after seeing his lover die, fights for about 3 seconds to go to Mars to be with his son so he's not raised alone, and then gives up and wanders away from the program for 17 years. And gives up. Doesn't even keep track of what's going on with his kid.
Well, and who's really, aside from a time clock, who's the antagonist?
There isn't one.
Gary Oldman is not trying to, he's not like the bad NASA guy from E.T. He's just trying to catch him to save his life.
Yep.
I mean, if anything, he would have co-opted him to say, let's save your life and then I'll take you to meet your uncle. What? There's not a lot of consequence there.
All the cops in this film are Officer Bar Brady. They get outwitted by two kids at every step of the way. I mean, and these guys, I mean, Ender was able to track her from space and get an image of her. So, I mean, this is in a huge Big Brother era.
Such a big convenience. And that's one of my complaints. When there's a convenience that over conveniences, you can do it once, you can do it twice, but third time is a pattern of ill intent, a pattern of J.J. Abrams, because there's just way too much. He found her easy. He broke out of NASA in the easiest way possible. And then he just sneaks aboard a truck. You hear them shouting, shut down, lockdown, lockdown. Oh, but this truck gets out on time. That's okay.
And they check it with a flashlight for 2 seconds. Yeah. One cares.
I mean,
now, admittedly, I hate doing this, but I can give you a reason probably why.
Okay.
Most of the time, let's be honest, NASA is probably worried about people getting in.
That's true.
Not people trying to get out.
That's true.
Okay, well, I wouldn't say that's a great chance, but there's a chance. I'll grant it.
But you fly from drama in other places too. She slaps him when he first meets him.
And that lasts about 2 seconds.
Right. But by within 15 seconds, it's over. And then when she says, get out of the car, that lasts a minute and it's over.
Or when he meets his uncle.
Right.
That whole, you're not my son. And like 1 minute later, okay, we're done with him now. You could just exit stage left.
Oh, this
left.
Isn't my father?
Matter.
Yeah, I don't need you. And I'm going to go walk out into
left,
the ocean.
Please.
But like, I kept waiting for the moment in every love story, the male lead loses female lead and then has to win her back. Doesn't happen in this film. That's even the most basic drama possible.
For a
and you took it away.
Film.
There's never a point where you believe the cops are really going to catch them.
No.
It's never a point where you question Gary Oldman's motives. Never a point where you question Space Mom's motives. Even Gary Oldman and Space Mom's fight lasts for about 30 seconds. These people are all, it's like they have Gene Roddenberry's first season script from Star Trek or Writer's Bible where there can be no conflict. And I guess in the end, what you get is a film that is probably a perfect tribute to form that is boring. And I bring up an example to what I mean by this because I'll quote Star Trek. Data once read this poem to Geordi and put Riker to sleep with it and then asked if it was, if it evoked an emotional response. And Geordi said, it's a tribute to form. It's perfect. Felis catus, ode to Spock. Felis catus is your taxonomic nomenclature, an endothermic quadruped carnivorous by nature. Your visual, olfactory, and auditory senses contribute to your hunting and natural defenses. I find myself intrigued by your subvocal oscillations, a singular development of cat communications. This obviates your basic hedonistic predilection for a rhythmic stroking of your fur to demonstrate affection. A tail is quite essential for your acrobatic talents. You would not be so agile if you lacked its counterbalance. And when not being used to aid in locomotion, it often serves to illustrate the state of your emotion. Oh, Spot, the complex levels of your behavior you display connote a fairly well-developed cognitive array. And though you are not sentient, Spot, and do not comprehend, I nonetheless consider you a true and valued friend. That is probably a perfect poem by form.
Oh, it is.
Oh, and, sorry, you put me asleep.
And
you made it halfway.
I would rather listen to a Vogon read poetry at me than Data. And
a
that's
Vogon?
To me.
You're going to have to explain that one to the some
Hitchhiker's
of us.
Guide to the Galaxy. Never let a Vogon read you poetry.
Yeah.
The third most offensive form of poetry in the universe. Third worst form of poetry in the universe. But it's a. That is this movie. This movie is ode to Spot.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. It is boring. It is. But you can't find anything to criticize it. The acting, while not superb, is not
fine.
Bad.
It's fine.
It's visually
emo,
stunning. The score is fine.
Yeah.
It's
the effects
not great.
The effects are good and match space.
Yeah. Nothing.
It's a fine movie, but it doesn't invoke anything.
No, exactly. It doesn't make, this isn't improving the craft of cinema. It's not, honestly, it's like if they took a NASA tourist instructional video and then decided to add a love story to it. Except they added the love story in hindsight after the instructional video was put in there. Was done, and they said, oh, quick, add a love story in there. That's what it reminds me of. Because the parts that are accurate enough, but then it looks like they forgot to add a story, which would be fine if you're just giving an instructional video, because you don't need a story. But then when you try to add one, it just... ugh. I guess that's the best way to put it. A NASA instructional film that suddenly had a romance story slapped into it, or at least a facsimile of a romance story.
It's an okay romance story. There's nothing wrong with the romance story angle in this film.
Except it goes nowhere.
Yeah, it goes nowhere, and it has nothing to keep you interested.
I think we can rip and pick it now. I gotta start with a rip. I understand this scene that they wanted to make Gardner look like he was completely a fish out of water on Earth. So they have this horse coming at them, and he, whoa, what is that? Wait.
Except he's seen movies.
You've seen movies. You were raised by scientists. And didn't you just reference an elephant not too long ago? So a horse blows your mind? Like, shouldn't it have been, whoa, look, a guy riding a horse. You still do that? That line would have been believable for someone who had never been to Terra Firma. But just, whoa, it's a horse. What is that? Or no, he didn't even say a horse. What is that? Wait, you don't know what a horse is. You know all this other stuff, but a horse escaped you? I'm really having trouble with that one. Nice. There's better fish out of water methods than that.
Yeah. This film has, let's be honest, quite a few problems with how it delivered stuff. And that's just one of many. I mean, let's be honest, the first guy he meets, which apparently just is that
homeless guy.
What? Who is that? What the? Yeah. What was that?
What's your favorite thing about Earth?
Yeah, I thought that first scene was going to go much differently than it did. The junk collector sitting outside of his shop in a fire barrel.
Yeah. Oh, this is fire? Well, okay, he wouldn't have seen fire. That's true.
By the way, you kind of don't want fire on Mars, but yeah.
By the way, what was that stupid scene where he goes out on a rover and drives around and flips over? What was all that about? What was that?
Teenage angst.
Because at the time, I was just sitting there going, all right, and this added to the story how? It didn't. They were showing you
that he was an angsty teen. They were trying to cram in the raising a child on Mars in isolation thing.
Yeah, okay, but then they did that and then immediately brought him back down to a good boy.
Yeah, but that becomes her trigger to say, I don't care how, we got to get this kid back to Earth.
All right, I guess. It was
a ham-fisted contrivance, or not even contrivance, just a ham-fisted plot advancement hack and slash. Here's the bad guy, attack him because he's a bad guy.
Yeah.
All right.
Gardner should be dead. With his brittle bones and the fact that
he had inanimate carbon rods in them. Thank the rod. Rod we trust.
Even then, when he jumps out of that plane, the bruising, like he has inanimate carbon in his bones.
Oh, yeah. That's
but
right.
His blood vessels and his organs probably shouldn't have been able to handle that.
No.
His lungs would have been under too much pressure to probably inflate properly and handle that. He should have been dead right then and there. He never should have been strong enough to be able to pull himself up into the plane. He should have reached up to grab the plane and fallen under the plane and gotten ran over.
Actually, because the only training we see him doing is running. He's running laps. We never see him doing strength training.
Right.
Right.
He's not going to be able to do a pull-up, which is what he would need to do there. It's even more than a pull-up. It's a muscle-up. If you think a pull-up's hard, do a muscle-up.
Oh, no thanks. Those suck.
He's not exactly Bobby Draper training, so.
No. He'd have reached up to grab that, and his grip strength would have failed in a moment, and if the plane doesn't run him over, the government vehicles chasing after him would have.
I'm just picturing that now. Oh, Gardner! Yeah! Boom, 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 boom. Oh, God, no. Oh, my God, it splatters worse than a normal human. All that squishy flesh is just...
I'm imagining Chris Farley. I killed it. Yeah. I killed my son.
And then I blow it.
Or you could travel Admiral Kirk. NASA bastards. Killed my son. NASA bastards. Killed my son.
I'm just picturing that now. Just the movie coming to an abrupt end as Gardner, bah, 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 and you see like the mannequin getting run over by a car. Except they make it so that it's extra squishy, like they put watermelons in
like
or something.
Like the mannequin from Velocipaster.
Yeah. Or they put like squash in for arms and they squish it because that's what is, you know,
and
he's Gallagher, so brittle.
Gallagher just comes over with a mallet and smashes his head up. Would have made a better movie.
Oh, no. I just killed my boy. Ugh, what a mess.
Okay, I'm going back into retirement now.
Yeah, that does, though, bring up the point that this guy who is supposed to be so great has left everything.
Who compensated that poor guy's rancher's barn who got blown up and lit on fire by the airplane? Like, did NASA write him a check? Did the company write him a check? Like, that guy's owed a building.
Or all the people who had their cars stolen.
Yeah. Right. This somehow, and this also brings up the good point that I don't know how we didn't bring this up yet. How did this story not leak?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. By that, especially when he came back, you would think.
Well, this story should have leaked way before then.
Oh, sure.
Because let's be honest, there's a kid on Mars. Okay, fantastic.
Someone's going to bring that up.
I have a theory.
Go ahead.
Oh, you're going to Mars on the Habitat. Yes? Oh, you are. Okay. Here's your $250,000 bonus. Please sign this piece of paper. Thank you. Here you go. Oh, at the bottom of this piece of paper is a non-disclosure agreement. If you talk about the kid on Mars, you're in violation of the non-disclosure agreement, and you owe us 10 times the $250,000 bonus we gave you back.
Yes, fine. But here's the problem with that. And I get that, but here's the problem. In our current time period, we have people running to newspapers and newspapers reporting on hearsay of hearsay of hearsay. I heard from so-and-so that there was possibly said on such-and-such about so-and-so.
Well, and someone would leak it out there just because.
Oh,
why
yeah.
Moral.
It's
It could be morals. It could be I just want to be the person that gets the scoop and get famous.
I get to use my grammatically incorrect line again. In a movie full of idiot premises, this isn't even the biggest idiot premise
that
of
is
the
true.
Film. It's like the third. It's an idiotic premise that NASA and a private corporation could keep a kid on Mars secret for 16 years. It's an idiotic premise. Almost as idiotic as NASA would let said kid come back to Earth.
Well, I mean, they explain how they wrote off the mom dying. Okay, but what about, and plus too, generally NASA being a publicly funded institution, unless it's with proprietary technology, pretty much has cameras on all of their missions. You could go online right now and see whatever it is they're seeing.
Barring the duplicate mission crew camera.
Oh, right. Barring any proprietary technology. So at some point, this kid who's finding all sorts of ways to hack this and sneak into that and break out of this would have walked in front of a camera that everybody got to see and been like, hello.
Right.
Well,
exactly.
You're also right that at this point we are still questioning if the landing on the moon happened, and somehow no one has yet come up with the conspiracy theory that there's a kid on Mars.
Oh, well, I mean, look, that's the other thing. Like, that's the other thing, how we know this is false. NASA's not going to be able to come up with this, cover up and hold it. They can't even hide the fact that they didn't land on the moon. They can't even hide the fact that when they actually did go to the moon, aliens pulled up beside the ship and paced them to the moon. And they can't even hide the fact that when they actually did get there, at some point we stopped going there because the aliens on the dark side of the moon, using the staging ground for invasion, told us not to come back. Because any alien that can get... Oh, I'm sorry. That's another month.
Don't come back to the moon. But otherwise, you'll see how we're going to conquer you.
Right. I mean,
that's right, Kodos.
I mean, you know, Neil Armstrong told us in his speech at the White House, and the weirdest speech anyone's ever made. We know NASA can't keep a secret. Hell, we got one of the astronauts out there who thinks that he's communing with spirits and can do remote viewing.
Yeah.
So yeah, one of these astronauts would have said something about the kid being raised in captivity on Mars against his will.
At least one.
Right. And you could, and even if they didn't want it, even if there was an NDA, they could just leak it to one person who followed a rabbit trail. And then, yeah, at some point, the word's getting out.
Space Woodward would have followed the money.
Yeah. Which, yeah, that's a whole nother thing. You got to bring stuff up to the kid on the planet. It's like, and again, most of NASA's stuff is public record. So I'm sure there's public records of, why are we shipping kids' toys up to Mars?
Yeah. How come there's how come there's postnatal gear going there?
Hey, what are we doing with these 37 baby onesies? Why are we shipping up? Why are we shipping up years worth of clothes? Yeah, what did they clothe this kid in for the first year until they could get a shipment of clothing up there?
Blankets. Because, yeah, that is a good point, too. At some point, a company, you know, what's one of the companies that does baby clothes or something? You know, we just got an order from NASA for onesies.
Yeah, and at the same time, they also,
actually, that is a good point.
The a bunch of T2 and T3 clothes.
Yeah, and with the NASA emblem on it? What?
Yeah. And we also have to find this ultra gentle formula of soap. What are we putting this on? A baby duck?
NASA's hiring a tutor for grades K through 12. Why? Who are we tutoring?
or nothing to look you.
Yeah. Well, or that one, you don't have to fly him out. You could just have him go via computer. But still, yeah. What's your job?
Is that Mars in the background out the window?
Yeah. I'm talking to this kid who looks really lanky and weird. I think there might be something wrong with him. And oh my God, he just did a backflip and he hung in the air for like 10 seconds.
Well, not just that, but you got the thing where you're like, somehow a boardroom of only four people get to decide if this gets leaked or not.
A boardroom big enough for 37 people too.
Yes. But I'm like, dude, you don't bring anyone else in on this and you don't have NASA themselves going, wait a minute. I'm sorry. I get you want to keep this a secret because this is donator based, but we can't keep this secret. There's none of that.
16 years later, it's the same four people in the boardroom, including the same medical doctor.
Yeah.
No boardroom has the exact same composition 16 years later.
Well, that's right, especially if they start losing money and the stockholders decide time for a change.
Also, this doctor is apparently the female version of Nick Riviera because the Space Habitat Program Director has to suggest that she check his blood for the really important thing that will say that his heart is enlarged. Where did you get your medical license, doctor?
Upstairs Hollywood Medical College, of course.
Wait, right. We have exhaustively checked him. We've run blood work and everything, except for this one thing.
His blood is virtually good, except for the really important thing. I didn't bother to test it because I'm lazy.
Well, and that's the funny part. It's virtually fine. Virtually fine. Thanks. I'm glad they wrote that in the script because I thought the same thing. Virtually. I think we need something a little more definitive than virtually. So, yeah, we've
got a concern of an enlarged heart. That's the primary concern, is his heart. Why would you not have checked for the other thing in his blood that if it was there would say, hey, this kid's about to die. We need to get him back to Mars. Oh, because it's a contrivance that the doctor needs to be completely stupid for this idiot plot to work.
Well, I love it when... How do you make some plots work? Stupid pills.
Right, yeah.
Stupid pills. When your characters are just too smart for your own story.
Right. The plot needs to advance. Or the other thing is, we need to inform the audience with some exposition. How are we going to ham-fist them in there? Well, let's have this person be completely dumb and ask a question that they know the answer to.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Like in an Interstellar, when the astronauts have to discuss with when they have to inform each other about what a black hole is, it's like they would already know that. Don't you guys already know that? All you need to do is say black hole and everyone's on the same wavelength. Like, oh, black hole. But yeah, exposition dump is a very careful thing. We've done a lot. Speaking of dumping, we've been dumping on this a lot. What did we like about it? Because we've said kind of that it's not horrible. It's not fantastic or anything. It's adequate. So that must mean there's something good to push it to that adequate level. I'd say the effects are good. It does give you that kind of, I guess you would say, if we toned down and didn't make the Expanse grimdark, it would be something like that.
The effects are good, and
you liked the score.
The score was all right. There's nothing remarkable about it. It's overall probably a technically correct film and a plot that advances by the numbers, but I can't even say I like that. It's just, there's nothing in this film that I like. There's things that I don't hate.
Okay, because I'll tell you one thing I like.
As far as I can go.
When the ship landed on those platforms on the beach, that was something that SpaceX is looking into because they have landed rockets on the ground. And so that was clearly coming from SpaceX. So I liked that. I appreciated that touch. Again, I mean, these are minor things that did it save the movie. Well, no, but it was nice.
It falls into things I don't hate.
Yeah. Which is a lot of this. Let's be honest. It's like, I can't say I hate this or that because it's like, it's not bad, but.
One of the things that are what's neat too is when you're on Mars, obviously it's very red, but then they indulge the colors here to kind of give you this sense that you're looking through Gardner's eyes. Because when he was here, if all you saw was Mars red your whole life, and then you came here, everything would just be so vibrant. It would be an explosion of color that it would overwhelm your senses. And that, I think that was an interesting choice to do.
Okay, Rage Master, you have made me revise my statement. I like the cinematography of this film. The cinematography of this film is done well. And I feel bad for the guy that did it because he did fantastic work on a very forgettable film.
That's probably true of many cinematographers. So I think he or she would just take it in stride and say, well, I've done stuff that's gotten less attention than that. And I would say that was about the sum of, and I do appreciate that they tried to make it through the look that near future. The technology wasn't so overwhelming that it was impossible to believe. There was still enough old tech, you know, older cars, for example. You saw the newer with the older, you know, Gary Oldman was sleeping in his car on the way as it self drove. But then you saw older cars. And so
Oldman's sleeping car was a Volvo that looks just like this year's model. And 16 years later, the Volvo still looks like this year's model.
Right. But
I feel like that's a diss.
But I think that's a nice touch. You try to, because let's be honest, when we looked at like Back to the Future 2, that movie, like many other movies that Zemeckis and Spielberg grew up with, envisioned the future being different top to bottom. Every single aspect being different. Whereas in reality, that's simply not the case. Genes are still genes. You still have older cars. I mean, I drive a car from 2003 for crying out loud. It just was a grandpa mobile and was kept in a garage most of its life. So the condition is really great, but you still have that. You still have people that drive around in older cars. And then you also have those people that have a brand like the Scots who lease like crazy, who have the brand spanking new car that puts mine utterly to shame.
I can see that the liberals only won their progressive criminal justice system by giving up on their green emissions agenda because the current agenda to get rid of gasoline powered cars by 2035 clearly didn't happen in this film.
Oh no, 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 no. So, but it just, you get to see that nice combination. So, but that's a setting thing. That's a not enough to make me say, oh, what a great movie. It was just a touch that made me say, well, it's not a garbage fest.
That's what's tough about that. If you do great work on setting and camera work and angles, and even acting and directing, it can't save a boring film.
I've said that my entire life, that effects and camera work and visuals and art in a comic are just window dressing.
It's the same thing with good science.
If you take away a good story and good character development, it doesn't matter how good it looks. It doesn't matter how keen you made the setting. It's still ho-hum.
Yep.
I've said it before. I'll say it again. It's like being trapped in an excruciating marriage, but the sex is dynamite. Well, yeah, but every other moment you're not in bed with your spouse is a waking nightmare. So is it really that great after all? No, it's not.
Separate homes. No. We ready to rate this thing?
I think so. How many? Well, I have a title, but I'm okay.
Inanimate carbon rods? Carbon rods?
Thank you. That's much better. Okay. How many inanimate carbon rods do we want to give this?
I'll go first.
Oh, okay. Go for it.
All right. As a love story, I give this maybe a 4 as just the love part of it.
That's generous.
Oh, and I'm not finished, but I'm just saying the love story. I've seen much worse love stories, so I'm like, this isn't the worst I've seen, but this isn't a fantastic love story.
That's so sad that you can only get better. You can only give it bigger or better because you've seen worse.
Yeah. Yeah. But as a movie, I put this down at a 3, maybe a 2. Because this is just, I honestly, there were movies that I have said are terrible, but go see. Go watch this movie. This is a movie where I'm like, don't watch it. This is a generic, blah movie. You don't need to see it. It's completely unneeded to. There's not any film thing or any effects or anything that really should make you want to see this. The love story's not there. So what's there? Nothing. Don't see this film. It's just meh.
I'm going to give it 4 inanimate carbon rods. And here's why. It's not a bad film. There's nothing bad about this film. The acting is fine. The direction is fine. The cinematography and camera work is good. The score is good. The plot is riddled with contrivances. But for a movie to be bad, it's got to be like The Wandering Earth, or it's got to be like Star Crash, where it's there are some movies that are so bad they're good, like Velocipaster, because they're intending to be.
Or Star Crash.
Right. Okay. No. But okay. At any rate, this movie isn't bad, and there's nothing that you can just rip it apart. It would get a nice C+ in a film school class. But there's no heart to it, and there's no soul to it. When you take out any amount of drama, then you better come up with something like The Notebook. Even The Notebook had more drama than this, for sure. And you didn't deliver The Notebook. And when you took any amount of conflict and drama out of this film, then you better had come up with a notebook in space, and you didn't. And the real thing is that this film had to be carried by Asa Butterfield and Blondie 90210, and neither of them have the superb acting skill necessary to carry that film on the weight of their emotions and their delivery and their emoting. You don't ever feel it. I kind of feel that these two love each other and care about each other, and there's moments, but it would have required a masterclass in acting that we just didn't get from these two. And honestly, it's a lot to ask from a 16-year-old kid, which is what Butterfield was at that point.
Stop saying his last name. It's an awful last name.
Yes. But anyway, you were asking, it was too tall of a task. And then I get very disappointed with Gary Oldman in this film because I don't ever buy him as the grieving father.
For about a second.
It really, yeah, when he's rushing into the ocean. And even then, he's better than that. And he should have been better than that. And I feel that he'll look back on this film at the end of his career and say, this was not one of my better performances. And I'm not proud of this one. This was a film about characters that had to be carried by the actors and actresses, and none of them are up to the task. And then beyond that, it was a film that had a chance to do so many things well. And even if it had stayed on the premise that it had, had it not ran away from the multiple avenues of conflict that it could have had to drive the story and to vest you, it could have been better. But with no vesting in the characters and really them being nothing more than really thinly developed cardboard cutouts, it's just a film that's there, which makes it boring and below average.
Yeah, so this film had a good concept at its heart. Unfortunately, the concept is done better as a scientific exploration, which means it should have been something like a kind of like that National Geographic documentary we watched about Evacuate Earth. It would have been better suited for that because you could have had more science and the little bits of drama necessary to make it work. This really, as I said, looks like a National Geographic documentary, which was to be meant to be purely informative. And then someone got the idea, hey, let's make it a love story. And it just got jammed together. The characters are fine, but no one really stands out as, oh, they carried that movie. And which is unfortunate, since Gary Oldman is such a good actor that there's not anything to write home about for him. So yeah, I would say that this would go to about a 4 because conceptually it was great, but it was implemented in the wrong direction. It's kind of like making a war movie and then, or saying, let's make a war movie. We're going to talk about bread.
Yeah. I was just,
we're going to talk about grain production during a war film.
The challenges of getting the bread to the front line.
And you could, I mean, but that would have been more intriguing because then you're involved in,
at least there's a conflict.
Exactly. If you're talking about World War One and Hoover's efforts to feed soldiers and what it took to get through, you know, the convoy system or something, that would be relevant. I'm just talking about the actual planting of bread. And instead of, well, during the war, I had to sit here and splash my crops and here's how I did.
I'm hoping you mean planting of wheat, but okay.
Yeah, I said crops, but
you said bread.
Oh, I said planting of bread.
Doesn't work like that. You just wait until my bread tree grows.
Whoops!
But Rage Master,
I'm glad I did make that comparison.
Did I mention
mistake
that the kid's best friend is a robot?
Is he? Wait a minute. No, is he a talking pie that goes back in time for some reason?
Yes. Okay.
Sold.
Stay with me. Stay with me. What if Gardner Elliott, when he arrives at Earth, is kidnapped for some reason by an all-star team of East German terrorists, and John McClane happens to be brought in to save the kid?
Well, then it becomes good. But then it's no longer, by that point, you've essentially halt, slammed on the brakes and told everyone, all right, we're not doing this movie anymore. We're basically doing Die Hard.
Hey, it wouldn't be the first time that a movie that wasn't a Die Hard was made into a Die Hard.
Well, that's true, but I'm just saying it would make it at least, well,
watchable.
Okay, hypothetically anyway, it would make it watchable. But yeah, that's the problem. It's like a war film that's talking about how to harvest wheat. And that's the issue with this. That's what makes it a 4. That's what makes it the lack of character involvement, the romance story that's not really a romance story, and the horrible contrivances of just don't ask questions. He just gets there. Don't ask questions. They just do this. Don't ask questions. It's just got to work. Otherwise, this whole story doesn't go.
She can fly and land the plane. Yeah, she watched her drunk foster
even though
father.
She said she can't, she can. All of these things just make it a 4.
It stinks. It stinks. It stinks.
So what can we say about Sanguine Sci-Fi? Well, let's see. We've ranged the gamut from passengers, which is okay, to her, which was actually good because it was really looking into a dynamic human element instead of trying to say, well, let's make something with space and love and jamming them together and mush it to see what happened. They took in her, they took a real issue and that's feasible and going on and exploring that in detail. They were
women
focused.
Women who like to be choked with dead cats.
They were, yes, they were laser focused on a theme that worked. And this movie, which was a lot like Passengers in that the science was pretty good, but then again, that was the backdrop to a romance story that, at least in Passengers, the romance story was more believable. I granted that, which is weird because online romances are a real thing. So you had something. It's conceivable that Tulsa and Gardner could have fallen in love via online chat, but they didn't even go that route. Or they did, but they minimized it so much that it's a case of just, it's like standing in line at the DMV. But next month, on the other hand, is going to, not really spruce it up, but it might be a bit more interesting. In commemoration of when the lockdown started, we are doing Malady March. That is, we're going to be doing films or shows about contagion. So that is what you can look forward to next month. If you have any requests for that or anything else, you can reach us at
www.mybonesarebrittleandihatemymouth.com. ravinglunaticmedia.com, ravinglunaticmedia.com, ravinglunaticmedia.com. There is no dead cat in the floor next to my bed. Rage Master, what's left for them to do?
Stay sick, sickies.
But the most damning thing of all, I
listen to Sci-Fi Malady.
And if I had to do it all over again, I would.
Listen to Sci-Fi Malady, because
I can live with it. Computer, erase that entire personal log.